Thanks for inviting me into your house, your long-haul truck, your RV, camper, taxi cab, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, your cabin in the woods. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. It is great to be here, and thanks for your company as we ride this juggernaut straight on through till morning. The new James Bond movie, Spectre, was released in North America this weekend, and it enjoyed a strong debut, not surprisingly. Spectre box office receipts totaled $73 million in the U.S., which is the second strongest domestic opening for a Bond movie of all time, only below 2012 Skyfall, which raked in $88.4 million. We are going to delve into the history of Her Majesty's Secret Service and the real James Bonds during the last 2 hours of the program. A former military intelligence officer and a leading expert on Britain's spies, Michael Smith, will be here to reveal how one of the world's most secretive of agencies originated and developed into the MI6 we know today, the real James Bonds. And not surprisingly, they bore little resemblance to George Lazenby, Roger Moore, or Timothy Dalton. All too often, I'm sure you'll agree, we in the media paint a pretty grim portrayal of reality, the world as it exists today. Bad news, really bad news. It's certainly not in short supply. Let's face it, things seem pretty dire out there. ISIS, a spiraling federal debt, racial unrest, floods, environmental degradation, corruption. There is no end to bad news. Well, tonight, perhaps, we can remedy that. About a month and a half ago, I read an online article about this breakthrough CO2 technology that came with a pretty audacious claim that it could eliminate vehicle exhaust fumes at the source. Let me repeat that. A CO2 technology that can eliminate vehicle exhaust fumes at the source. Nova Institute Technology out of Utah has introduced this breakthrough technology for removing all vehicle exhaust fumes before they leave the tailpipe. It's called the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System, a CO2 device, and it can also be adapted to gas vents, used in refineries, exhaust stacks for incinerators, and implemented in more than 100 other common uses. Again, a pretty bold claim. I thought, if true, this is undoubtedly a game changer. I mean, this is the end of air pollution. This is, for those who subscribe to the theory of anthropogenic global warming or man-made global warming, this is the end of that. Then I waited to hear about David Yurth and the Nova Institute of Technology on CNN, MSNBC, Fox. I waited to read about it in the New York Times, Toronto Star, the Washington Post. Nothing. Crickets. All right, I thought. I'll wait. It's my turn, until it's my turn at bat on the mighty Coast to Coast AM, and I'll talk about it. And so, in the first 2 hours, the Director of Science and Technology for the Nova Institute of Technology in Salt Lake City, Utah, will drop by to discuss the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System, a compact, lightweight, low-cost energy efficiency device that eradicates all exhaust fumes produced by internal combustion engines before they leave the tailpipe. If this is all on the up and up, I'm here to tell you now, I think this might just be a real game changer. This just might be a monumental breakthrough. Nobel Prize winning stuff. Very exciting. And you're about to learn all about it right here on Coast to Coast AM in mere minutes. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Why don't you stay a while? David G. Yurth is Director of Science and Technology for the Nova Institute of Technology, and as a consultant project manager for several independently owned prototype development groups. His professional focus for 50 years has been in the field of technology development, invention management, and system integration. He served as chief scientist, managing partner, founder, director, and CEO of numerous companies. His experience is heavily weighted in industry networking, technology analytics and research, and prototype development and testing. He's invented or co-invented more than 60 innovative technology-based integrations and devices. He's also the author of 12 books, 15 screenplays, and 12 scientific papers, articles, and scientific monographs. He serves as a scientific peer reviewer and editor for 5 peer-reviewed scientific publications. Now the important stuff. He plays guitar, 5-string banjo, and electric bass. I knew I liked this guy. And he's married, lives with his wife Claudine, and there are 7 cats in Holiday, Utah. David Urth, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hi, Richard. Thanks. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Likewise. All right. Now, I washed out of science about grade 10 physics, so I need you to keep this real simple. And I'm guessing, you know, there are other people out there like me. What does this device, this corona discharge gas plasma dissociation system, that's a mouthful, what does it do exactly in simple terms?
In the simplest terms, what it does is unwind the force fields that organize the molecules of carbon dioxide and other exhaust gases, does it in a way that takes the constituent ions apart, and the system we've developed then induces other conditions which prevent them from recombining into their former form, so that instead of getting carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide and NOx and uncombusted fuel and methane, what you get out the tailpipe is nanoparticulated carbon particles and water vapor and elemental gases.
So the claim here is then, this is, am I overstating it to say this is the end of pollution, at least from internal combustion engines? It's the end of air pollution?
It certainly could be.
Then why have I not heard about this? I mentioned off the top, I read about this about maybe a month and a half ago, end of September, I think it was. This online article was released from a public relations company, I think.
Yeah, you got a press release, I think.
Right. Why haven't I heard about it on CNN, Fox, read about it in the New York Times? I mean, this is a game changer, is it not?
It is a game changer, Richard, and I think there are a couple of reasons why you haven't heard any more about it. The first is that it's difficult to do. And if it was easy, it would have been done a long time ago, right? And the second reason is that there is this deeply entrenched myth that it simply isn't doable, that it can't be done. And I think there's a well-deserved and probably very high degree of skepticism about the likelihood of a truly effective technology becoming available. You know, the press release was issued 2 days after the Volkswagen emissions scandal hit the papers. We were very conscious of what was coming, been following this for quite some time. So it wasn't a terrible surprise to us to learn that the engines that in some of the vehicles that Volkswagen and its subsidiaries were producing were actually emitting considerably higher levels of contaminating exhaust gases than they said. But it was also not a surprise to us to learn that in subsequent weeks, Volkswagen and their scientific teams have been telling people they don't know how to fix the problem at the expense of performance. If they truly do what they have promised their consumers they're going to do, they so significantly degrade the performance of their automobiles that people won't buy them anymore. It's a real conundrum for them.
Well, in the case of Volkswagen, there were at least 11 million cars that I suppose will have to be recalled, and this defeat mechanism or piece of hardware will have to be taken out, and the situation will have to be remedied. I mean, this is going to cost the company, I'm guessing, billions of dollars. Wouldn't they love to get their hands on your piece of technology? Have you contacted a Volkswagen and other auto manufacturers to let them know what you have in your possession?
Well, we've begun the process. Part of the issue with getting in touch with Volkswagen is that Volkswagen and its subsidiaries and affiliates in the automobile manufacturing market employ nearly 500,000 people. And it is an incontestable fact of life that even when we talk with senior executive management people from Volkswagen and Mercedes and Audi, they don't know who to refer us to. We're still trying to figure out how to get in front of the right people to talk about this. And so, you know, that's a process.
In other words, the company, and there are other, you know, auto manufacturers probably with a similar structure, the company, the Volkswagen, is so large, they're not equipped to deal with this game-changing technology. I mean, imagine now, we're talking about an auto manufacturer. Now, you know, think about trying to get a government, a federal government, to listen to you.
Well, it's a daunting challenge. And it's part and parcel of the process that we live with all the time. We're really good at the science of this. We've been at it continuously, vigorously for decades now. But the fact that we know a lot about the science and that we build prototypes and equipment and devices and electronic circuits and test beds and instrumentation bays and all of the things that are required in order to take an idea and reduce it to a physical embodiment and get it to operate in a way that produces the kind of results we're looking for, all of that stuff doesn't mean we know anything else. You know, we don't have access to people who are in the boardrooms of the big three automakers in Detroit. Those guys are so well insulated. There's such a not invented here attitude in the automobile manufacturing business that it is extremely rare that anyone's technology that comes from outside the system is actually given consideration and really embraced. So, you know, we're not surprised that this is a real Sisyphus exercise. We're really pushing a big stone up a steep incline, but we're persistent.
Must be incredibly frustrating. It's like having the cure for cancer in your hand, and yet you can't get the medical community to pay you any attention.
Well, here's a perfect example. Cristiana Figueres is the United Nations climate change chief. She's the one who's been given the responsibility for organizing the climate change conference that's scheduled to be in Paris at the end of November. We can't break through the insulation to get in touch with her to let her know that this technology is real and we have data and it really works and it's available. You know, the degree of insulation that separates people in one field from senior people in other fields is really difficult to deal with. And we're little guys. Nova Institute of Technology is a privately owned and operated research and development company. We design and build and test our own prototypes, and we design and build and test prototypes for other people. We've done this for a long time. And, you know, our guys are really competent. We have a superlative team of really good professional people. But we're not finance guys. We don't understand what it takes to deal with Wall Street. We're not publicly traded. We're not in the public relations and media business. We do the science.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on this program, David, it was the hope that someone out there listening might be, you know, the money guy or someone who's some way connected who can bring this corona discharge gas plasma disassociation system to the decision makers. What does this device look like?
Well, if you just picture the end of the tailpipe on your automobile, at the end of most automobile exhaust systems, there's a second muffler called a resonator, and the final tailpipe section comes out of that, goes under the rear bumper, and channels the exhaust gases out beyond the back end of the automobile. If you take that pipe off, and you replace it with a piece of equipment that has the same diameter on the inside, but which is about 4 inches thick all the way around, and about 6 inches long. That is the embodiment of the apparatus that includes all the pieces and parts and connections and so on, that actually dissociates the gases as they're coming out of the exhaust system, but before they escape out through the end of the tailpipe.
And so what you mentioned, these nano carbon particles or something.
Right.
Explain to me again what ends up coming out of the tailpipe of an internal combustion engine if it has one of these gas plasma disassociation systems attached.
Okay, let's step back one step and look at what comes out in the normal exhaust profile. When your engine is running, a 1.8 liter engine running at 2,500 RPM produces over 35 liters of exhaust gas per second. That's what goes down through the tailpipe, goes past the muffler, goes through the second section of the tailpipe, and comes out through the back. Those gases have a profile. This is the emissions test stuff that we do here in Utah. Some states require it and some states don't, but in Utah we have to test for some of these. So you have in that stream of exhaust gases unignited fuel. Only about 40% of the fuel that goes through your engine actually gets ignited. The rest of it goes out your tailpipe. It's hot and it's energized, but it's still gasoline. Part of it gets broken down into a more fundamental form, and that's methane. And then you have carbon dioxide, which is a combustion product, and a daughter product, carbon monoxide, which is the really poisonous stuff. And then you have oxides of nitrogen that's referred to in the literature as NO, nitrogen, oxygen, with a subscript X. So it's not just NO2 or NO4. It is a family of speciated, very noxious nitrous oxides that are the product of incomplete and inefficient combustion.
Smog.
All that crap plus particles, which are defined by regulation from EPA in terms of their size. A particulate particle at 2.5 microns, 2.5 millionths of a meter diameter, PPM 2.5. And that's the nasty black stuff that you see on the back of your bumper if you don't wash your car. Okay, that's what comes out of your engine naturally. The most difficult of all of those exhaust products to fracture, to fragment, ionize, take apart, dissociate, is carbon dioxide.
It's a very stable molecule.
It's extremely stable. It's a happy gas. And it's not like water. Carbon dioxide is a linear molecule. You have a carbon atom that sits between two oxygen atoms that operate literally opposed from each other at 180 degrees. So there's no bending of them toward or away from each other as there is with other molecules like water. So the dynamic that attaches the oxygens to the energy field of the carbon is produced by a variety of different functions. There's a certain degree of spin, there's a direction of spin, there are van der Waals forces that operate in covalent bonds. But in anybody's interpretation of molecular steady state dynamics, carbon dioxide stays carbon dioxide between 160 degrees below zero Fahrenheit and 3,500 degrees Fahrenheit. It's still
so that's stays. The secret here. You figured out a way to crack it.
Well, yeah, and it's not about cracking it. The physical model that's used to describe the dynamic actions of the constituents for carbon dioxide and other 3- and 4-atom molecules misses a couple of very important salient elements.
Okay, we'll get to those salient elements in a moment, David. Just hold on. When we come back, I also want to find out, again, what comes out of the tailpipe if you have one of these devices attached to your tailpipe. This is exciting stuff, folks. This could be history in the making. Back with more of my conversation with inventor, banjo player, David Yurth, when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. I'm a love man, Otis Redding. If that don't make you happy, you don't have a heart beating in your chest. And that reminds me, speaking of love, great news for all of you romantics looking to make a connection, perhaps other Coast to Coast listeners. ParanormalDate.com now has somewhere north of 27,000 members. But here's the good news. It's now available as an app. That's right. You can take Paranormal Date with you wherever you go. It's a free download. It's available at the Google Play Store. Check it out, Paranormal Date. And you just download it today at ParanormalDate.com. Remember, you are not alone. Hey, how about the end of air pollution? Is that something you want to hear more about? Well, hang around, because you're about to. David Yurth, talking about his invention, which will eradicate, or can eradicate, all those noxious fumes coming out of the end of your tailpipe. Pretty exciting stuff. Keep it locked here, Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto, Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. And David G. Yurth is with us, Director of Science and Technology for the Nova Institute of Technology. And we are talking about his breakthrough CO2 technology. The bold, audacious claim here is that it eliminates vehicle exhaust fumes at the source, the end of air pollution. David, just to clarify, this is applicable not only to internal combustion engines, but you could put this on a coal-fired electric generating plant. What else?
Anything that burns an ignitable fuel.
Anything that burns an ignitable fuel. All right, before the break, you were talking, in my limited knowledge of science, was trying to understand how, you know, you take this stable CO2 molecule, and I said you crack it. You said, no, you don't crack it. You were explaining the process.
You unwind it.
You unwind it, all right.
Yeah, you unwind it. The question you asked before we took a take. Took a break, we didn't really get to finish the answer for that, and that is, what do you get out of the tailpipe of an automobile? So the simple answer to that is that you look at the constituents of the gases. Carbon and hydrogen make up the fuel. Oxygen is the oxidant. It is the gas that combines under heat and pressure to combine with carbon and with hydrogen. When the oxygen combines with the carbon, you get CO2. When carbon monoxide, when nitrogen combines with oxygen, you get NOx. When it combines with hydrogen, you get water vapor. So when you unwind the pieces, then you end up with carbon, finely particulated carbon, diameter about 25 nanometers. That is 100 times smaller than PPM 2.5, which is the stuff that everybody gets upset about that is present in the smog that comes out of automobile and truck exhausts. So these little carbon particles are created by an aggregation of carbon 12 atoms that are liberated in the plasma field when we dissociate all these exhaust molecules.
Would I be overreaching to suggest that what's coming out of the tailpipe might even be cleaner than what's going into the intake manifold?
Well, it's elemental. Whether you want to say it's cleaner or not, I guess is a discussion we can have. But the fuel that goes in consists of long-chain hydrocarbon molecules. Gasoline has 8 carbons and 18 hydrogens in each molecule. And in the combustion cycle, when those long chain molecules are subjected to pressure and heat, and they're combined with a certain amount of air, and then a high voltage discharge in the range of 20 to 25,000 volts at the end of your spark plug is introduced, then it initiates these processes that produce the exhaust contaminating gases and allows some of the uncombusted fuel to flow out after it's been heated and discharged.
Now this press release that came out at the end of September, I mean, have you known that this works for some time? Or, I mean, give me a sense of the chronology here. Was there like an aha moment and, you know, throw your hat in the air and break out the champagne? Or, has this been
a long-term process, Richard? Yeah. We know that this technology in early embodiments was working in 2007. We've been working in our laboratories building prototypes and doing testing and instrumentation for about 15 years, the last 10 of which have been primarily devoted to understanding how these molecules work, what their dynamic functions are, and learning how to dissociate them using one technique or another. So this is not absolutely brand new. It's been in formative development since about 2007. What we've done that makes it usable, that makes it practical, in having the science work is one thing, having it work in a way that you can actually use is another matter entirely sometimes. In this case, we designed a new kind of spark plug. And the way we operate this spark plug is fundamentally different from any other kind of spark plug that's being manufactured and sold in the world today, because it uses what is called a corona discharge field rather than just a simple electric arc. And instead of a single pulse, it's a bifurcated pulse that switches very, very rapidly from amperes to voltage.
So this is not just theoretical. This is not an equation on a blackboard.
No, sir.
This is an actual piece of hardware that you have on a vehicle, where, in a lab somewhere, or is it out on the road?
We've got 4 different systems under development now that use the same basic pieces of equipment. The plasma discharge device is a proprietary component that we own, that we make in our laboratory. We have patents pending on this stuff. We have data and instrumentation and applications. We're in the process now of initiating the contract to manufacture and distribute the spark plugs under the brand name Dyno Plug through our friends at SaviCorp in Santa Ana, California. Their president, Serge Monros, is a co-inventor with me and several other fellows. And so we know that works. It took us 30 months to figure out how to adapt what happens inside the cylinder of an engine in the combustion cycle to dissociate the gases once they've been created.
What do you say to people, David, listening, who says this is too good to be true? There must be a catch. Or, we've heard these types of claims before. We heard about Stanley Myers and the water engine. And, you know, imagine running an internal combustion on water. This just cannot be true.
Well, it is true. In our laboratory in 2012, we ran engines on water and on oxyhydrogen gas created from water for many, many hours. We have data, we have prototypes, we have protocols. That it can be done is no longer a question.
Okay, so you're telling me Stanley Myers was right. That wasn't a hoax.
It was not a hoax. It was not a hoax at all. Stan Meyer didn't understand the specific principles, but he intuited that what he was doing would work, and he made it work. There cannot be any argument.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, David, then it sounds like you were focusing on how to try to figure out how to run an engine on hydroxy or gas or a water, recreate the water engine, and what this disassociation, the CO2 disassociation device, came as some sort of
it's a byproduct
by accident?
Of that research.
It's a byproduct.
Yeah, it's a byproduct of the research. We're an interesting little company, Richard. We have a rigor that we impose on our research projects that ordinarily isn't used by small privately owned companies because it's difficult, it requires more time, and it's more expensive, and it's more rigorous. The product of doing that as a matter of regular course is that over time, the learnings that come from all the things you try to do that don't work, or that only work a little bit, or that work in ways you don't understand, all of that information then becomes accessible and retrievable and can be evaluated because it's been archived somewhere. So,
well, like a lot of people, I saw those videos on YouTube of Stanley Myers running his dune buggy on water.
Yep.
And thinking, well, okay, what's going on here? this can't be happening.
Look, there's a kind of myth that operates in the world. I got blackballed by a bunch of people who take their science and their conferences very seriously. I presented a workshop called Science is Fiction, because it is. The story we tell about why things work and how they work is a constantly evolving exercise that changes the storyline all the time. What we knew about science 20 years ago is different than what we know about it today, and the story we tell is different. The fiction is different. It may be more well-informed, but it's still not the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. There are all kinds of patents and devices that have been demonstrated to do all kinds of things that science and culture say are not possible. Not only are they possible, one of our missions is to figure out how to understand and reproduce them so they can be used.
This is dangerous stuff, David. This is dangerous stuff. I mean, some have suggested that Stanley Myers paid with his life for
Stanley Myers was an idiot.
Ooh, okay.
Look, if you decide that when you come across a phenomenological project that really does something spectacular, that constitutes a disruptive technology, and then you decide you're going to go right out into the world and proclaim what it is and what it does and how it works and go on YouTube and, you know, dance around this dream of getting the Nobel Prize and being on the David Letterman show. The minute you do that, you might just as well paint a target on your forehead and go stand in the middle of rush hour traffic on I-15. There's a way to survive the transition from the point of conception of genuinely viable scientific advancement that takes you into the marketplace in a way that works, that does not expose you to the kind of danger that most inventors fall victim to. I've got all those teeth marks, and some of them are pretty deep. And over the 40 or 50 years I've been involved in this business, I've learned some things. I wrote a book published by Dandelion Books in Mesa, Arizona, by our good friend Carol Adler, who's our partner in NOVA. She's the chairman of the board of NOVA Institute. The title of the book, you know, is Ho Chi Minh Guerrilla Warfare Handbook.
That's quite a title.
It's the Strategic Guide to Innovation Management. And what it says is that when you create a disruptive innovation, Jeffrey Moore was right. You declare war on everyone whose interest is threatened by your innovation. You don't create the innovation because you want to be in conflict, but conflict arises because it threatens other people's interests, their market share, their profitability, their indispensability, whatever that is. And so being able to traverse from concept to commercial application, going across that minefield, requires a kind of conceptual dexterity that most people in our culture don't possess. I mean, Ho Chi Minh, say what you want about him, didn't it appear on the cover of Time magazine as the man of the year 4 times in 1 decade for nothing. He figured out how to prevail against insuperable odds. Nobody gave that little man a chance at all of prevailing in that conflict. He beat the most powerful armies in the history of the world with a sharpened bamboo stick and a stolen rifle. The question I ask in this book is, how in the world did he do that? We know how he did it. And those principles, those Ho Chi Minh guerrilla warfare principles, apply to the way we develop and drive our technologies into the market. We've been sitting on this stuff for a long time. The time has now come for us to go to the market with a controlled release, with data, with credibility that invites independent verification. We're gonna be going through this process right after the first of the year now, so that the technique that we've devised for remediating CO2 and carbon emissions in coal-fired power plants coming out of our test bed prototype is going to be independently verified and tested by a bunch of other very competent people.
Well, one of the things that you do, David, is you're a scientific peer reviewer.
That is correct.
So has this technology been subjected to peer review?
We're in the process of doing that right now.
That's going to be interesting to see how these scientific journals react, don't you think?
I think it's fascinating. I really do. I mean, we understand the peer review process. You know, when you're in the middle of the process, you learn what the rules of engagement are, and it's like being in the boardroom of, you know, major corporations. If you don't know the hidden rules and regulations and the protocols that operate in the boardroom, you have no business being there. Peer review, in most cases, is a really treacherous proposition. It's like filing for a patent. You know, people continue to operate on the basis of the notion that filing for patent protection on intellectual property buys you something. Part of it's driven by the demand from Wall Street that the technology has to be conveyed in ownership to the company and it is a bookable asset and yada, yada, yada as part of the valuation and capital formation process. But the fact of the matter is that every year the patent review committees confiscate, classify, impound, prevent all kinds of important technologies from ever making it into the marketplace. And they have the right under federal law to do that. So, you know, we don't have any delusions about this process. What we know is that despite all of the dragons that we have to deal with, and we know what they are because we've all got their teeth marks on our backside, despite all of that, if we don't solve the problem, we won't have anything else to talk about.
Wow. David, can you
solve the problem?
Can you stick around? Because I would love to find out who is out there listening and love to take some questions and comments with you. Would you be good for that?
Sure, you bet.
David Yurth, Director of Science and Technology for the Nova Institute of Technology. He's in Utah, and the device, the Corona Discharge Gas Plasma Disassociation System. That's a mouthful, but what it does is it eradicates exhaust fumes, all exhaust fumes produced by internal combustion engines before they leave the tailpipe. Sound good? I think so. We will come back and discuss more, and also take your calls. We'll open up the phone lines and do that with David over the next hour. When we come back, I'd also like to find out, I mean, just think about this. The huge coal reserves in the United States. Imagine, being able to export cheap energy, coal, to places like Africa that has been denied its own industrial revolution. I mean, this isn't just about the environment. This could lift billions of people out of poverty. Game changer, my word. Back with more of Coast to Coast, there's Bob Dylan, the girl from the North Country. My name is Richard Serrett.